So far, we have seen three paths: the path of service, the path of love or devotion for God, and the path of yoga, where yoga means where we do those breathing exercises, and through breath control we quieten the mind and reach that. So the today's two verses will finish this path of yoga. And then next week we'll start the path of knowledge or inquiry. Well, these two verses have a lot of knowledge too, so it really takes us to the highest truth. So we shall start the verses and try to finish them both today. So verse number 15 on page 47.
Nashtamanasotkrishtayoginah krityamastikim swastitim yatah
So nashtamanasa means one whose mind is destroyed. Mind destroyed does not mean he becomes an idiot, has, you know, zero IQ. What we had talked last week, there are two minds. One is the judgmental mind, which has likes and dislikes, and which, you know, divides people and judges and, you know, distinguishes. And that mind is the problem. That's the mind that creates joy, sorrow, hatred. And then there is the functional mind, which we need to function. I need to get up in the morning, take a bath, go to work, do my duties, remember, you know, the directions. So that functional mind, which is required to function, continues to function. But in the wise person, this the disturbing mind, or the disturbed mind, or the judgmental mind gets destroyed, ends. Destroyed means he has no more judgment, no more likes and dislikes. He just universally accepts everybody as they are. You and I, we still have a lot of, you know, likes and dislikes and so on. So a wise person whose this judgmental or disturbing mind is destroyed, has ended, what do we call him? Utkrishta yogina. He's the highest yogi. So there are different kinds of yogis. Like we say, there is karma yogi, one who serves the world unselfishly. That's wonderful. Then there is the bhakta yogi, the devotee who loves God, and that is also good. But in this path of knowledge, the highest yogi is the one who through knowledge has understood this highest truth. So Raman Maharishi calls him the highest yogi who through right knowledge has reached that state of realization. That's what they call as Jivan Mukta. In Hindi they call it Jivan Mukta, means one who has realized while living. See, there are some people who after death, they go to higher worlds, and there, you know, after they study, they meet with other saints and they realize. But there are others who in this life itself have realized the truth. People like Buddha or Shankaracharya or Jesus or Guru Nanak or these great saints, Swami Chinmayananda, and all those have living in this body have realized. So that is called the highest yogi. Krityam asti kim. Krityam means, is there anything for such a person to do? You have already attained the highest. It's like you have the highest degree, PhD, and in the best university. Now, is there anything more for him to study? No, he's not going to go back to kindergarten or BA or bachelor's or master's. He has attained the highest, or he has won the Nobel Prize. Is there anything else for such a person to win? No. So similarly, having attained the highest, does this person have to even do anything? Or what does he do? Why? Swastitim yataha. As this person has abided in the self, he has become one with the self, the Lord within, then is there any goal, is there any purpose for this person to live, or does the person just live uselessly and gives up his body? So before we talk about such a person, let's talk about ourselves. Is there anything for us to do? And you and I, because we think we are this limited, finite BMI, so we work for happiness. Because I think that I am incomplete, I am this limited being, and by getting this object, I will be happy, or getting this person, or this position, or this power, or more money. If I only have $1 million, then I can retire, you know, then I don't have to do anything. So we are always postponing our happiness in the future. Right now I am unhappy, but tomorrow or next year or after retirement or in 5 years, you know, this is my goal. Once I get it, I'll be happy. So we always keep postponing our happiness into the future, that something or something else will make me happy. Talking about happiness, this lady tells her friend, she says, for 25 years, our husband, she says, for 25 years, my husband and I were very happy. She said, really? Then what happened? She said, then we met.
Oh. I wasn't expecting that.
So we think that somebody or something will make us happy. That's number one. So we always work out of incompleteness, always postponing. The other problem we have, that we think I am so important. You know, without me, you know, this house will fall apart, this organization will fall apart. I do so much. And think about it, nothing or nobody is important. When I am here, before I was here, the world was going fine. After I came and after I leave, the world will go on. Before there were computers, you know, we say computers, I can't live without computers. Before there were computers in 1960, didn't the world go on? Before there was TV, didn't the people, you know, still communicate? Before there was automobiles, cars, didn't people get around? The world always has been getting around. Other thing people think, you know, these great kings, they come, or these great presidents. I am so important, you know, I am so great. So many presidents have come and gone. How many do we remember except for Lincoln and Jefferson and Washington? Rest, anybody else do we remember? No, they come and go. Kings, there were thousands of kings in India. There have been different states. And all the kings have, only one we remember is Buddha, who was a king, but he gave up his kingdom to become a monk. He's the one we remember, or maybe King Ashoka. Why do we remember him? Because he also, while being a king, spread Buddhism, spread the message in India and throughout the world. So those, there are so many Roman emperors and Greek emperors. Do we remember any of them? Maybe Caesar and, you know, Alexander the Great beside that. But we remember Jesus, who was not even an emperor, had nothing to his name. He was just an ordinary individual. But a person who has realized the truth, who has become one with that, he or she becomes famous. We remember Mirabai. We remember Mother Teresa, Saint Francis. Why Guru Nanak? Because these people had gone beyond the world and experienced their true self and had become prophets, had become saints, had become messengers of truth. So to think that I am so important is foolish, because as long as you're looking for completeness in the world, you will always be unhappy, because the world will never give you permanent happiness. Somebody loves me today, won't love me tomorrow. I have a position today, I won't have it. I was president today and tomorrow I am a nobody. So give up that and start your spiritual journey, because that is the only way for permanent happiness and to realize your true nature. Otherwise, any other accomplishments, no matter how big it is, even you may have millions or billions, is nothing compared to the achievement of a realized master who has experienced the truth. So such a master who has become one with the self, how does he or she work in the world? First of all, do they have to work? We say no, they don't need to work. They have already achieved the highest. And in fact, there are so many masters who they say they have realized, and they are sitting in the Himalayas or in the forest in deep meditation, and they don't even move, and they drop their body. They stay like that for years. And you say, what, he has wasted his life? No, even by their presence of just being on this earth, They spread so much positive energy, so much positive vibrations, a lot more than anybody could do with their speech. So they say that such a person does not need to work. There is no, so does that mean that the person becomes useless or does not work? No, because you and I work for happiness. He works out of happiness because he realizes I am joy, I am happiness. So his actions are an expression of his inner joy. So his actions are to serve the world, to share that joy, because he sees the oneness. He sees everybody as that one truth, everybody as me. So spontaneously his actions become service for the world. He spreads the knowledge that he has obtained. He does work for the betterment of others, but not with the desire that, oh, I have to help, or by helping I'll become great. A spontaneous outflow of love and oneness comes out through such an individual. And for him, there is no me or my or I, because you and I, we still have this ego. I am so important. I. But in him, that I has died, that ego has dead, and he becomes an instrument of God, because the perceiver, feeler, thinker no longer exists. His body, mind, and intellect become an instrument of the Lord within. And he says, that's why Jesus said, thy will be done, O Lord, not mine. So constantly, such a person does God's will, serves the world, and some of them may choose to travel, some of them just don't choose to travel. I'll give you the example of Swami Tapovan and Swami Chinmayananda. Swami Chinmayananda, as you know, was the founder of this mission. So his guru was Swami Tapovan. Now, Tapovan lived in the Himalayas, and he lived there, and he didn't want to go anywhere. He didn't want to travel. He was a realized master. He said, look, if anybody wants to learn, he will come here. So people had to walk 8 days to reach his cottage, and they had to live in very frugal conditions, in very tough situation, very freezing cold. And he was a very strict teacher, and he would say, I'm going to talk to you only once. I'm not going to repeat. If you don't remember it, after a few days, when I ask you, you can get out. And so he was so tough, he had sometimes one or two students, sometimes three maximum. Nobody could tolerate that. He was so tough. And he was not interested in going around spreading this knowledge. But his student, Swami Chinmayananda, who learned from him, said, this knowledge I have to spread, what my guru has given me. So he takes his guru's permission and travels throughout the world spreading this knowledge and writing books. And we have in the bookstore a lot of books by Swami Chinmayananda, making DVDs. People recorded and made DVDs and tapes. And then he encouraged people to establish missions throughout the world to continue his work. He taught so many students. So one person stayed there and did nothing. You might say, well, he hardly did anything. He maybe taught a few students and he was fine. Another one chose to travel throughout the world and worked, 22 hours a day, 21 hours a day. He would only sleep 3 hours. Now, who is a greater yogi? Both are. It just depends on your nature. Are you more enterprising, a rajasic person? Or you are just content, or even that yogi who just stays in meditation, doesn't go anywhere, doesn't do anything. Each one, having experienced that highest truth, shows in very different ways. Look at Jesus, look at Buddha, look at Shankaracharya, Guru Nanak, Mirabai, all great saints, and each one is so different from the other. But their final experience is the same when they reach that state of highest realization. But based on their nature, based on the community they live in, based on the language, the teachings appear different. So they say such a person has no duty. So he says, doesn't he do anything? No. Whatever work comes in front of him, the person does it. There's a very, very beautiful story about a monk. So there was this great, head of a mission, very, very well respected, realized master. And people, hundreds of people came to listen to him, and he had a great following. And so there was this young man who was his disciple who would go every day and listen to his talks. And so one day he told the head of the mission, please come to my house for lunch. So he said, okay, I'll come. And so there was some misunderstanding. The boy thought that he was supposed to pick up the monk. And the monk somehow thought that he was supposed to reach on his own. So the monk, the sadhu, asked one of his devotees to drop him at that boy's house, at the young man's house. So he dropped him. And so he walks into the house. Now the boy wasn't home because he had gone to pick up the monk. He had thought, I'm supposed to pick him up. So he was at the mission gone. And so this monk comes to the house, and this boy's father was at home. And the father didn't believe in this particular mission. He never went. He didn't believe in religion and all that spirituality. He thought these guys are all bunk. So he sees this guy in orange clothes walking into this house. He said, who are you? He said, I'm Swami so-and-so. He said, okay, so what? He said, well, I'm here, for lunch. He says, you're here for lunch? You look a healthy guy. Why don't you do some work before I give you lunch? So he said, what work is there? He says, go to the back of my house in the barn. There is a lot of hay. Some of the hay is rotting and some of the hay is good. I want you to separate the good from the rotten hay and then chop the hay into the good hay into small bits. So, okay. So this head of the mission, this monk, walks into this back, and there is this rotting barn and there is bad hay. So he's very nicely separating the rotten from the good, and then he's chopping it. He's doing his work for about an hour. In the meantime, this young man went to the mission and said, oh, I have come to pick up the head of the mission. They said, oh, he went to your house with so-and-so. He did? Oh, gosh, let me run home. So he quickly drives home and he asks his father, did anybody come? He said, yeah, some monk came, So where is he? Oh, he's in the barn chopping up hay. So he goes there and he sees, oh my God, my guru, this person whom I worship is here in this barn, dirty barn. His clothes are dirty and all. And he's chopping. So he falls at his feet and apologizes. He says, I'm sorry. But the man says, there's nothing to be sorry about. This work had to be done, a chopping of hay. So I did it. So what? So that's the beauty of this wise person, that there is no work that is big or no work that is small. Whatever work the Lord has put in front of me, they do it cheerfully. They do it well. They do it to the best of their ability. Swami Chinmayananda, when he mailed the letters, it was very interesting. Once people were folding, there were like 200-300 letters to be mailed. So they were just folding and sticking the stamp and, sticking the return. And he got upset. He said, look, this is not the way. When a letter goes from the mission, it has to be exact. So the address has to be in the middle. The stamp has to be exactly in, not crooked, straight in the corner. The return label has to be exact. You cannot do haphazard, crooked and throw. No. Any work, he says, if you do it, the work should be done properly. So that is the greatness of these masters, that for them, work is worship. Because God is working through me, it is the will of God. So that's why they say even the scriptures cannot tell them, even the Bible or the Gita or the Vedas cannot tell them what to do. They are even beyond, they have crossed beyond the scriptures. So they say, well, the Bible does not tell them and the Gita, that means they can do whatever they want. Yes, they can do whatever they want. But when they do something, they are not going to abuse that freedom. See, you and I, when we say, oh, I can do whatever I want, we always think about doing something bad. Right? I can sleep all night, eat what I want. No. When they say do what they want, again, their actions are so pure that they cannot but do good. So that is why they say for such a yogi, there is no compulsion to act, but they act out of love. The next one is about the vision of reality. What do we mean by I will see reality? This verse, I think, will complete this subject. So next week, we can start the topic of knowledge. So he says, what do we mean by I experience consciousness and I will see God? What do we mean by that? Do we see God or do we experience consciousness? Or what do we mean by realized master? Does he have, Does he see God in front of him standing, or does he have a halo, all that? So that is described here in verse number 16. So verse number 16. Drishyavaritam chittamatmanah. Chittamatmanah. Chitvadarshanam tatvadarshanam. Chanam tatvadarshanam. So drishyavaritam. Negating the objects, withdrawing from the objects. Chittam, the mind, atmanaha, chitva darshanam. So he sees his mind as the consciousness. That I am the consciousness. That is his experience. And that is called tatva darshanam. That is called vision of reality. So what is realization, or what is vision of reality? Negating the objects, withdrawing from the objects, and the mind experiences its oneness with the self, with the consciousness. So let us see, how do we do that? We had talked even last week, everything is like the glass is, the pointer is, the book is, the mic is, the table is. Now, isness is common, right? The chair is. Everything is, but the name and form is different. Table is different from chair, is different from glass, from pointer, from book, from mic. The name and form are different, but the isness is common, right? Mic is, table is, chair is. So the isness, it is, that is the substratum, that is the support, that is the what we call as sat. Sat means existence, isness. That is the support, that is the substratum. And on that substratum, we see different names and forms. You see a long thing, you call it pointer. You see something round, you call it a glass. You see a flat with a written writing, you call it book. The name and form are different, but the substratum is one. So there is one substratum, one consciousness. And on that, all names and forms appear, whether it's Diana or Anil or, whatever names and forms, Bill. The name and form are different. Somebody's male, somebody's female, somebody's Asian, American, white, black. The names and forms are different, but the substratum in all of us is that one isness. Like I am, he is, she is, you are. So that isness, I am, is common, but the name and form changes. So that's why, that's what they say, that negate the name and form, negate the objects, and go beyond and see the substratum, that there is one consciousness, one substratum supporting everything in this universe. And such a person develops total love for all, total respect for even inanimate objects, even a chair, even a shoe is. It is that consciousness. So even respect for his shoes, respect for even his books, inanimate objects, also he develops that same respect as he does for his mother and father and friend and beloved and all, because they are all isness. So once you go beyond name and form, then what you see is the consciousness is within and without. Within me also, I am that consciousness, having this name and form called Anil, who is functioning, who is working. And among the others also, it is that same consciousness, that same which has different names and forms. So that same consciousness is within and without. So this continuous flow that I am that consciousness, I am that consciousness, this name and form is a temporary appearance. After a few years, I won't be here. I'll be dead. I'll be gone. But the I will remain. The consciousness will remain. But this name and form called Anil will not live forever. And it will merge into the totality. And I'll end. But I will never die. The name and form will perish. But I, that consciousness, that substratum, never perishes. So continuously, I have to have this flow of thought continuously in my mind. I am that consciousness. That is me. Like she says, soham, that consciousness is me. He is me. So I am not this body. I am not this name and form. This name and form will end, but I will never end. And so what such a person then becomes fearless of death? Because not only that, but even changes that happen, you know, at the body level, at the mind, intellect level, the changes that happen in the situations cannot affect me because I am not this body. I am the consciousness. If this body is hurting, let it. I'll take medicine and take care of it. So such a person goes beyond even death and becomes one with that consciousness and experiences that consciousness within and without. Then people have this idea that one day when I realize I will experience I will experience God, I will experience that self, that consciousness. Even now you are experiencing that consciousness. Otherwise, how are you able to speak? How are you able to listen? If consciousness was not functioning through us, we would not be sitting here. We would be in some funeral home, you know, and people would be crying over us. But we are here because even right now I am experiencing that consciousness. So then say, what's the difference between me and a realized master? He also experiences consciousness. I also. But in us, the mind is impure. We have a lot of impurities in our mind. Anger, jealousy, greed, hatred. And so because of the impurity, the consciousness is muddied. It is covered. It is not shining. But in a wise person, in a saint whose mind is destroyed, whose likes and dislikes are destroyed, the consciousness freely expresses. So it's not that I experience consciousness, but a wise person expresses divinity. That's why when you're sitting in the presence of a great soul, you experience God's presence because God is functioning through all of us, but we cover it because of our ignorance, because of our negativities. As our mind becomes purer and purer, we come closer and closer to expressing the truth. And then in our scriptures, they talk about seeing God. You know, he sat in for meditation and for so many years, you know, in the rain and cold and heat. And then God appeared before him. You know, God came. What is seeing God? What do we mean by seeing God? You know, that's why he says tatva darshanam. Darshan means to see. So when they say seeing God, it does not mean that one day I'm sitting in meditation and suddenly this golden form will appear and say, child, I'm here to bless you. What do you want? You know, people have all these ideas, especially in Hinduism, that I'll be sitting in meditation and then Krishna will come and say, okay, child, I'm here to bless you. Seeing God is nothing but knowing God as my true self. So when they say darshan, darshan does not mean seeing, darshan means knowing the truth that I am that reality. You, and also what it means is that God is inside and outside me. Everywhere is that one God. That understanding, when the person continuously has, you and I may have this understanding here, maybe in this class, after having heard and after having spoken for a while, we might say, yeah, you know, God is everywhere. Ah, everything. And then you go out and then somebody honks at you. Immediately, all that consciousness is gone and you get mad and you know, you say some words or you point a finger or, you know, you get angry and you don't say anything. So immediately that consciousness disappears and anger takes its place. So this understanding continuously is the vision of reality. So vision of reality is experiencing the Lord within. Once you notice the Lord within, then you experience him everywhere. And that is what we practice in our meditation, that in the silence, when you silence the mind, then you come to that understanding that I am this consciousness. And that same idea should stay with us throughout the day. It does not mean you keep on mechanically repeating, I am consciousness, I am consciousness. No, not like that. It's not something to be chanted or a mantra. It is an understanding. It is an experience. Because if I am consciousness, then I should be always peaceful. I should always be loving. I should always be calm. I should be detached. Detached from my body, but attached to all others. Loving everybody else, but detached from my body, mind, and intellect. So the detachment and spontaneous love that we see, that is called vision of God. That is called realization. These are two very beautiful verses that need, you know, a lot of thinking. So I would encourage each one to go home and read the commentary again and think about it. What is the teacher trying to teach us? These verses are very short, but they are power-packed pellets. Now, they are short verses, but so much knowledge is packed into it. It's amazing. The teacher has done it in very, very few words. Express so much. It's really a blessing for me that I'm able to share this knowledge with all of you. So these are the two verses we have. Is there any comments, any questions? Yeah, that's true. But see, something that came and went, is that God?
Well, but God's in everything.
Yeah, but suppose God appears in a particular form. Say Jesus appears in front of you, right? And then disappears. You see a vision of Jesus.
Right.
Now that is not realization. That is a temporary, it could be a, just a state of your mind when your mind is peaceful. Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
But that's not the ultimate. That does not mean that I have the continuous understanding that Jesus is me, within me, that is realization. You may see visions, and I have also had, you know, visions of, you know, but what happens with the problem with the vision is, A, it's a projection of the mind. The mind is projecting that vision. It's, you know, the mind is projecting Jesus or Krishna or Gurudev. You know, these happen. Secondly, anything that came and went is not God, because God is permanent, was, is, and always will be. So it's good. You have the vision. It's very good. That means your mind is becoming purer. It's becoming quieter, and you are experiencing them. But do not get attached to the vision. Do not expect to repeat it. Oh, I saw Jesus today in my meditation. I should even see him tomorrow, or I should see Krishna again. Once you get attached to the vision, that's when the problem, then your meditation becomes, okay, now I am wanting, I am seeking. In meditation, you are not wanting, you are not seeking, you are not trying to get anything. You are just abiding in the self. So that's the problem with vision. One is, it gives you a false sense of ego that now I am realized. You know, I saw Jesus, now I am a master, now I don't need to. That's number one. Number two, you go around telling everybody, you know what, last night in my meditation, have you seen Jesus? You have seen him? Krishna, have you seen? I saw. So that's number two. It fattens your ego. And thirdly, you wish to repeat that experience. So that is the thing with the vision. I mean, it's good. There is nothing wrong. If you see God, that's wonderful. But that's not the goal. Ultimately, the goal is to experience the oneness. But that's good. There's nothing wrong. Yeah.
Ego.
Exactly.
I mean, you finally see Jesus, and now you're like bragging
about it. Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, or Mother Mary, or, you know, or you saw a light, you know, blue light appeared, and, you know, you saw the. These are all. And there are some faiths that they tell them, you know, you have to look for light and look for sound. And I think those are good to show that you are progressing. But then that's not something you go around bragging about it. I saw a blue light, or I heard a sound, or I, you know, because people, and then their whole meditation is to looking for that sound or for that light. It's ultimately meditation is within. It's not an experience. It is. And that is why they say you cannot, like they say, when I realize, what will happen, you know, when I realize. Even now you are realized, because even now you are the self, except you don't know it. So not knowing what I am, I'll come to know what I am. That is all. It is just a shift of knowledge. It's not that suddenly you'll get a halo, or suddenly you'll be able to walk on water, or suddenly. People ask Swamiji, can you read others' mind? Swamiji said, I have enough trouble with my own mind. Why would I want to read your mind and get more headaches? You know, they ask such questions, or can you predict the future, or can... These are all, you know, do you know yourself? That is called realization. Just know who you are. That's all you need to do. You don't need to, and you don't need to get supernatural powers. I mean, Jesus performed miracles out of his love for people. But that does not mean that if a person cannot perform miracles, he is not realized. Everybody is different. Everybody is, ultimately, is what do you know? And so realization is knowing God. So seeing God is knowing God. Seeing God is not a vision. It's not an experience. It is the knowledge. So knowledge is very important. That's why this whole book talks about the path of knowledge. So does that answer your question?
Right. I was more of a comment.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. Nothing wrong. Yeah.
I mean, I just want to make a quick third here, but what about all the people that Gerald thinks have seen the Virgin Mary all the time?
Oh, good point.
I mean, right. What's up with that?
They say they have seen the Virgin Mary, right?
I mean, you hear it all the time. People say, I've seen right. the Virgin Mary, or she appeared in my bathroom, or on the watermelon, or
in the... Right, on the wall. On the wall. Or on the wall. And again, it's just a vision. It does not mean they are realized. See, just by seeing the Virgin Mary... Yeah, what you want to see, it's a projection of your mind. And it's good. If your mind is quiet, you may have that experience. I'm not discounting. It's not bad. It's better to see the Virgin Mary than to see Madonna in your dream. You know what I'm saying? Or better to see, you know, than to see Elvis. But the point is, it is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But that does not mean that they realized. You know, if they see it, it's good, but is the Virgin Mary always in their heart? Do they always experience her presence? Such a person is realized. Just because somebody saw Virgin Mary, she came, appeared, and disappeared, that's a projection of the mind. And that's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not discounting it. But that does not make them great sages or saints. It's just appearance. It's good. Nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not the ultimate goal. Ultimate goal is Virgin Mary always with me in my heart? And that is realized. I am that Virgin Mary. That understanding should happen. I am that. I am that, you know, I am that great soul. And that is. So, it's good. You know, I'm not trying to discount it. But let's not give too much importance to that. And let's not chase after visions. You know, if I don't have vision, that means I'm not doing anything. No. As long as my mind is more calm, it's more peaceful, I deal with others with less anger, and I'm becoming more gentle, more loving, more compassionate, less jealousy, less hatred. That is progress. Not what I'm seeing and all. And as long as I'm able to, you know, do more to help others, to serve the world, that is evolution, that is progress.
I mean, it's just my personal opinion.
Yes.
I'm not with anybody else, but I mean, I don't believe anybody sees the Virgin Mary. I do believe if you've seen Jesus Christ in front of you, you'd probably die right there. You know what I'm trying to say? You're just so overwhelmed. You're like,
no, you won't die. No, why would you die? You'll be a happier individual. That's good.
Don't call me now.
No, honestly, you won't die though. But to see him is good. But to experience him constantly within me, Jesus is and I are one, that is the final state. And such a person who has reached that state will himself become a state. Like Saint Francis, he was always with Jesus. He became an instrument of Jesus. You know, so that is called realization. That is true understanding of Jesus, not... If you see him, it's good. If you're in your meditation or in your dream or in your sleep, if Jesus appears, there's good. Nothing wrong with that. But that's not the ultimate. And you won't die. No, Jesus will make sure.
Always thought that if you've seen him, yes. You'd be overwhelmed.
You're like, well, medium. Yeah,
no, you'll be overwhelmed with joy. And he'll make sure he protects you. He's not going to let you die.